Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wag.
Well, welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I think we may have had some technical difficulties there. Obviously, with it being rainy and disgusting today, the Cardinals had technical difficulties as well. And I guess that's just transcending into us, and it wouldn't be a show without some technical issues. So welcome into the Toast Tavern. I am Michael Wags, Wagon Connect, joined alongside by my good buddy Scott Tobin, who is not fresh off of a day at Busch Stadium because, as we said before, the Cardinals were postponed today due to weather. So that means we get a chance to talk about Major League Baseball as a whole. But first off, man, Scott, how are you doing? I know you got a chance to enjoy opening day down at Busch Stadium, working there, as well as the weekend. So how are things going, and how was the weekend at Busch?
It was good, man. I'm actually wet from being at Busch Stadium today because I was at the ballpark. I was driving to the ballpark today, and I thought, man, I'm going to get down here. I'm going to get out of my car. I'm going to walk into the ballpark, and they're going to be like, yep, game's canceled. And that's exactly what happened. Literally, I was like two steps in the door of the ballpark when my supervisor was like, yeah, game's canceled. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But the Cardinals, being the first-class organization that they are, had everybody clock in, clock out, and pay us for 5 hours today, which is the minimum that we would normally work on a day. So, I mean, that's not bad when you're not going to be there to still get paid for, you know, at least part of the day. So we get treated pretty well by this organization. I'll definitely tell you that.
That's impressive. I mean, I think because the fact that, you know, people did have to travel down there from their homes, they got there and then it was canceled. It definitely was the least they could do. But I also know you talked about it during, you know, 2020 and even a little bit last year about, you know, how they basically compensated the staff at Busch Stadium because of the differing things that were going on between the pandemic and, you know, days that were, you know, games that were canceled or removed and all that kind of stuff. So it is nice to see that is continuing on here in 2022 post pandemic. I mean, things are still going on in that realm of things, but they're still treating you guys properly. And that's the greatest thing you can have from an organization standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were prepared to pay us, you know, if the lockout would have drug on and we would have missed this opening month, they were prepared to pay us our salaries for April. So, you know, they definitely take care of their employees. So you got to give the DeWitts and the Cardinal organization a lot of credit for that. But jumping back to how things actually were at the ballpark this weekend, man, it was so nice to be at Busch Stadium. It felt like baseball was back. It felt like 2019 and before, you know, there were over 130,000 people in the ballpark in 3 days this weekend. You know, it was amazing, man. The electricity was back, just people everywhere, people having fun, people enjoying themselves, smiling, laughing. It felt like the good old days, man. It was definitely a fun weekend.
And we got a chance to see how fun it was when, you know, they introduced the three legends, future Hall of Famers, and Adam Wainwright and Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. And it was nice that they were able to do that with a full capacity crowd. You know, like you said, over 130,000 people were there over this weekend. Nolan Arenado got his first real chance at experiencing opening day. You had guys like Corey Dickerson who were getting a chance to experience it for their first time. Even manager Ollie Marmol was able to, in a sense, experience it as a manager for the first time. And, you know, maybe it was a little too much because he was sick over the weekend, but maybe he was just celebrating what happened on opening day, which was the 9-0 victory over the Pirates. But once again, the pomp and circumstance were back. Everybody that I know of that was either there or watching still got, you know, they got those chills back that, you know, seeing the red jackets of the Hall of Famers, seeing the parade of Ford trucks and bringing in the lineup and all that. It just, everything was back to normal in a sense on Thursday. And, you know, then they had the off day and then continued the series over the weekend. And then it was going to wrap up today. But once again, just it's great that everything is back. It's still not fully 100% there, but we are so damn close. And Thursday was that moment where I sat back and I was like, okay, this is real. This is normal. We are back.
Yeah, it, like I said, it really felt like it. And I'll tell you what, man, Cardinals, nobody does opening day like the Cardinals, like we do in St. Louis. And there was not a dry eye in the house when that video hit, narrated by John Hamm, highlighting Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina, and Adam Wainwright. I mean, literally, you looked around and there were 45,000 people crying.
There were more than that crying at home as well, because, you know, it was just, yeah, the perfect moment. And the fact that John Hamm is now the voice of St. Louis sports, I mean, there you go, right? It's all you need.
Yep. He could do it all, apparently.
That he can. All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about the Cardinals opening weekend here in just a little bit, but we didn't get a chance to come to you guys last week for our Major League Baseball preview due to a couple of things health-wise and work-wise that cropped up. So we definitely have to dive in right away and to talk a little bit about our Major League Baseball preview. And we're going to go ahead and I'll pop this up on the screen, our predictions, and then we'll talk a little bit about them. So this is going to flash up here pretty quickly. So just kind of take a look at what we've basically predicted as far as this is concerned. A couple differences here and there, especially in the Central. It's not so much the West, a little flip-flopping as well. American League, yeah, we'll talk about the Red Sox in a little bit, as well as the Royals. They are a team that's on the rise as well. And, you know, the AL West is kind of set, I think. It's a little bit one of those spots where, you know, you've got the top and you've got the bottom, and that's about it. So as you see, they're going to continue to flash up there. But let's start with the NL East first, because I think that's where we have the most parity in our picks is that AL East. So you have essentially the Phillies up at the top. And I get why. I get why you had the Phillies up at the top. They are a team that has had a whole bunch of potential the last couple of years, just has not really been able to put things together. Obviously, they got Bryce Harper on that team. They built a little bit up around him as well. But what in your mind makes you think that the Phillies are finally going to take that next step and basically win the division and put themselves into a position to even go as far as maybe making the NLCS?
When you look at that lineup in that ballpark, you know, we all know that Philadelphia is a hitter's ballpark, and Bryce Harper's had done a really nice job. You know, they've had some, Rhys Hoskins, they've had some nice pieces, but when you're able to go out and add Kyle Schwarber and you're able to add Nick Castellanos to that lineup, you know, along with Didi Gregorius and all those other guys that you've got in that lineup, they're just going to, I mean, it's a murderer's row in that ballpark. The ball's going to fly. You know, we saw how Ryan Howard used to be able to just flick his wrist in that ballpark and hit the ball out to the opposite field. Imagine what Kyle Schwarber is going to do in that place, going to the opposite field. Same thing with Castellanos. I mean, they're going to crush the ball. And then I think their rotation, you know, at the top, especially when you've got Aaron Nola and you've got Zach Wheeler up there, I think they're going to be really tough in their rotation. Their defense isn't going to be great. I mean, because you're on some days you're going to have Schwarber and Castellanos in the outfield. Bryce Harper is going to have to be diving all over the place in the outfield. He'll be like running those guys out of the way to catch balls in left and right. But I think their rotation is solid, and I think that lineup is just going to be tough.
And they also shored up the bullpen as well, something that kind of gave them issues last year. So they got the bullpen is much improved. So yeah, adding all those things together, I definitely feel like, you know, they are right there. They have the potential of winning the division. But the fact that the Braves, you know, improved their bullpen and kind of not necessarily through trades or anything, improved their rotation. Their rotation's getting better because of guys coming back off of injuries. They also replaced Freddie Freeman with Matt Olson. Now, obviously, Freddie Freeman was the heart of that team. And when you take the heart away from it, it does change things up a little bit. But you got Ronald Acuna Jr., who is a very, very impactful and very emotional player who could take on that heart-type role. And then you're replacing Freeman with a guy in Matt Olson that is slightly better, I think. And you put all those things together, and I'm not going to sit there and say the Braves are going to run away with the division, but I think it is going to come down to those two between Atlanta and Philly really fighting for that top spot. And I just feel like right now, defending champions, until they're knocked off, they have to be the favorite in my mind.
I have some questions about the Braves. You know, the Freddie Freeman thing, you know, to take the guy who's the face of your franchise, the leader of that team, and move on from him. And then, yeah, I agree with you. Matt Olson's a little bit younger. He's a good ball player, but he's also coming from the American League. How long does it take him to adjust to National League pitching? How long does it take him to adjust to stepping into Freddie Freeman's shoes? Because if he gets off to a slow start, fans are going to be like, oh, man, he's not Freddie Freeman. You know, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Matt Olson to kind of fill that void, especially in Atlanta, where, like, you know, fans in Atlanta love Freddie Freeman. He's been the face of that franchise for a decade. So there's a lot of pressure there. Like you said, Ronald Acuña is coming back, but he's not going to be back in at full strength, you know, probably till the middle of May, mid to late May before he's really back fully. You know, and it's going to probably be closer to June before he's 100%. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. There's still some questions about their rotation. You know, I think Max Fried's going to be really good. You know, other than that, are some of those other guys going to step up? Are guys going to be healthy? You know, they had some issues with their rotation last year too. So can guys stay healthy? Can guys kind of step up and fill those other spots? Can Max Fried kind of take that next step in his career? You know, we all know how heralded he is, that class, him and Lucas Giolito and Jack Flaherty, all being on that high school team together and all the hoopla and fanfare around those three guys. Can Fried stay healthy and really assume that role as the number one guy in Atlanta? The Braves did go out and make some moves. You know, they went and got Kenley Jansen, although his first appearance as a closer in the Braves didn't go so well. So we'll see how the Braves bullpen works out. You know, and they're going to miss some guys. Jock Peterson's gone. You know, he was a big part of that team down the stretch. You know, so we'll see how they go. I think the Braves are going to be there, and I think they're going to be in a fight with the Phillies. But I just like the depth the Phillies have a little bit more than the Braves, honestly.
Yeah, and that could be the key to them taking the top spot. It's the depth in Philly. And then after that, you kind of look at it, and it's the Mets, it's the Marlins, and the Nationals. We believe that the Nationals are going to be way down the list, even with Juan Soto being there. The Nationals are going to be probably one of the worst teams in the league. I've got the Marlins ahead of the Mets this year, mainly because I just don't feel like the Mets are going to ever really be able to, you know, get over these injuries, especially to their starting pitchers. And if they're all healthy, you know, you got Scherzer and DeGrom and Syndergaard and all that. Well, not Syndergaard, but, you know, those, if they're all healthy, they could be a team that can win the division. And, you know, Buck Showalter's there as their head coach now. He's a couple years removed from coaching his last time in the majors. But, you know, you put a guy like Buck Showalter at the helm of that, you get a healthy rotation in New York, and they've got the bats to, you know, make some noise. But I just feel like, for some reason, the Mets are just snake bit when it comes to injuries, especially to their starters. And I just don't see them overcoming it this year. And I think the Marlins are really on the rise. I liked what they did last year. I think maybe they underperformed a little bit last year, but I really like what they are doing down there. And I think it's not so much that they're going to overtake and blow past the Mets, but I think at the end of the day, the Marlins are going to be just slightly better than the Mets due to health.
And that's what it's going to come down to. I mean, if the Mets are healthy, you know, the Mets could win that division. But, you know, every year Jacob DeGrom has an issue and misses a decent amount of time. You know, and, you know, look what happened to the Mets this year. I mean, DeGrom gets hurt, and then you give Max Scherzer $42 million, and he has a hamstring issue and can't make his first start. You know, he did pitch in game two, didn't pitch real long, but he was able to go out there. You know, and you have to have questions about Max at this point. I mean, we all love Max Scherzer, St. Louis guy, but he's 38 years old. You know, at any point in time, something could happen and Max could go down. You know, and then, like you said, that's just the history of the Mets. You know, will Francisco Lindor, you know, he really struggled for three-fourths of the year last year. He played better in August and September. Does he have a Francisco Lindor-type year this year? If he doesn't, that's a big issue for them. I think Starling Marte is a big piece to the Mets. You know, he's in their outfield this year and their leadoff guy. If he has a really good year, you know, that could be huge for them. If Pete Alonso bounces back and puts up those kind of numbers that we saw a couple of years ago, that could be big because a guy like Michael Conforto not there anymore in New York. So it's going to be interesting to see how they really turn that team around, because they didn't really go out and make that big position player splash that I think everybody thought they were going to do this year. You know, there's a lot of talk about Chris Bryant. There's a lot of talk about Matt Chapman. They didn't get any of those guys. You know, they got Marte. They got the third baseman from Milwaukee last year, who was kind of a one-year guy. We'll see how he hits in New York. It's not quite the hitter's ballpark there that Milwaukee is. So we'll see how he adjusts. I think there's a lot of questions with the Mets if everything goes good. You know, that's a three-team race. If not, then, like you said, they could be battling the Marlins for third or fourth place.
That they could. All right, let's flip over to the Central, home of the Cardinals. We both believe that the Cardinals will win this division. And after seeing Milwaukee the first weekend, our feelings are getting a lot stronger that the Cardinals are going to win this division. And, you know, let's start in St. Louis first off, because it is our team. It's the one that we see the most. Injuries are going to be the thing, just like the Mets in a sense. That's going to be something that will really affect this season going forward. And it's, once again, in the pitching rotation that the injuries are going to be the question marks. Obviously, right now, the offense is there. And I don't want to sit there and jinx anything, but this team offensively has stayed healthy the last couple of years. It's come down to the starters getting injured. And, you know, if you're going to have a guy like Adam Wainwright being the ace of your rotation, that's not going to bode well for the Cardinals, at least not in the postseason. Now, you could make it through the regular season and win your division if Adam Wainwright is the guy that's getting the most starts. But after seeing Miles Michaelis not get through four, after seeing Steven Matz get about four innings, the questions are there. Jack Flaherty's still out. Alex Reyes is injured. Are injuries going to be the key factor for the Cardinals this year? If they can get healthy, they can run away with it, but are they going to be able to overcome these?
Sorry about that. I think they're going to be okay. You talked about Steven Matz. He looked really good yesterday, the first two innings. You know, was dominant, struck out four of the first seven batters he faced. Then ran into a little issue. He apparently had a blister, which, you know, people go, oh, man, pitchers and blisters. But you develop a blister as a pitcher, that really is a problem because you have a hard time getting a grip. And locations on pitches start to not go where you want them to. And that's kind of what we saw happen in that third and fourth inning. Everything was up. He wasn't getting pitches down. So that makes me feel a little bit better because, like I said, those first two innings, he was pretty dominant yesterday, and then it just kind of all fell apart on him. So if the blister was the reason, then that makes a lot more sense there. Miles Michaelis struggled to a certain extent on Saturday. I mean, he wasn't horrible. He wasn't as sharp as you'd like to see him. He had good stuff. So, first start of the year, I'm not going to take a whole lot out of that. You know, we'll see. A lot of guys struggle their first couple of starts trying to get into a routine and everything. Really excited to see what Dakota Hudson looks like tomorrow night. I think he's a big, big key to this rotation. And then we'll see what happens. You know, Jack Flaherty, you know, nobody knows when we're going to get Jack Flaherty back. You know, we've heard different things this weekend as far as, you know, it could be a short amount of time. It could be a longer time than they were thinking. So, you know, it's still really up in the air to where Flaherty's at. I agree with you, though. The starting pitching is going to be the key. If they can hang in there and be in the hunt by the All-Star break, you know, at the trade deadline type in that area, I look for them to go out and get a pitcher. I really do. I think they will go make that move to try to solidify that starting rotation from the outside and really make a run. I do expect to see, while I say that, I do expect to see Matthew Liberatore contributing up here at some point, whether it be in the rotation or the bullpen.
That'd be nice to see. That definitely would be nice to see. And, you know, the offense is going to be there, as we've said. Nolan Arenado took home Player of the Week award for this past week. He's the third Cardinal to win it in the last 4 weeks. And going back to last season, you know, and Bader O'Neill get it near the end of the last season as well. But the offense has been very good. O'Neill had the five RBIs on opening day. Like we said, Arenado went, you know, crazy this weekend. Paul Goldschmidt had a very nice weekend as well. He was on base five times on opening day, four walks and a base hit. So, you know, the offense is there up and down. They're doing what they need to do. And it's nice to see that happening early because we know Goldschmidt is a notorious slow starter. Arenado, in a sense, has been a slow starter as well. So to see these guys hitting right off the bat gives you a really good feeling that at least offensively this team is going to be locked in for a while.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at the top half of that lineup, especially that 1-4, when you go Carlson, Goldie, Tyler O'Neill, and Arenado, that's about as good as there is in the National League. I think if you have a big question, it's still the DH spot. You know, Corey Dickerson had a hit and an RBI, but he didn't look great over the weekend. Albert just had the one game he played, of course, on opening day. And I was actually in the section right behind home plate. So I get to watch Albertson's bats pretty closely. I'm going to tell you what, man, even though he didn't have a hit on opening day, watching that swing, when he makes contact, it's still as pretty now as it was 10 years ago. I mean, he hit a couple of balls really, really hard on Thursday He lined out. He hit one line drive right at the left fielder. He hit a ball into center field that it got up in the wind. If it wasn't as windy as it was on Thursday, and he didn't hit it quite as high, he made him hit one out in the center field in his second at bat on Thursday. And a little FYI, he will be in the starting lineup as the DH tomorrow. So anybody that's got tickets tomorrow night, Albert will be in the lineup. But you know, that's where you want to see a little bit more production. And then, you know, like we said, Yadi kind of off to a slow start, but I don't worry about Yadi. You know, it may take him a few days because he had a shorter spring training than everybody else because he was dealing with some issues and didn't get down there. So it may take him a couple of weeks, but you know what you know what to expect from Yadi. I mean, he's gonna give you consistent at bats and come up with some big hits. And I think this lineup is gonna be really, really good, man. I expect him to be in the top 5 or 10 in the National League.
That's incredible. And yeah, tomorrow night you're gonna get a chance to see not only Albert Pujols in the lineup, but you're gonna get to see the presumptive AL Rookie of the Year and Bobby Witt Jr. here as well with the Royals, and he's off to a hot start. We'll talk about the Royals here in a little bit, but continuing the NL Central talk, we've got Milwaukee and Chicago slotted in at the 2 and 3 spots. Obviously, Milwaukee, we're looking at the rotation. It's going to be a very solid rotation outside of the first couple of games that they've had this year. It's really going to come down to the offense, though. I mean, Christian Yelich, is he going to bounce back? Are they going to have guys that, around him that are going to be able to produce? And the fact that they've scored just a few runs in the first 4 games of this season, it makes you question if the Brewers are actually going to be able to compete in this division. But I think you're going to see something happen with the Brewers. I think they will click a little bit, and it's going to have to be some 1-0, 2-1, 2-0 games. But they've got the rotation to do that. But I just don't feel like, for me, they're going to have enough to overtake what the Cardinals have potentially as far as everything that surrounds the team. I think Milwaukee is the second best team in this division, but I don't think it's close when it comes to 2-1.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're kind of polar opposites of each other, where the Cardinals are going to count on their offense. Milwaukee's got to count on that starting rotation to carry them. And, you know, the big question is, you know, those guys were outstanding last year, but that was really the first year that your big three really had pitched a full season in the major leagues. Are they able to to bounce back and be as dominant this year as they were last year in Milwaukee? If they're not, they're going to have a big problem because, like you said, you look at that offense, you know, it's Christian Yelich and who? You know, there's a lot of questions. I mean, Andrew McCutchen is somebody that they're counting on big time. And Andrew McCutchen was a great player, but a guy that you know, the days of really wanting to count on Andrew McCutchen to carry your team kind of passed 3 or 4 years ago. You know, he's kind of in the latter stages of his career where he's still a good ball player, but, you know, he's not the guy that I want to be depending on to lead my offense. And so, yeah, like you said, the Brewers are going to have to really count on their pitching. Their offense will score some runs in that ballpark because, you know, that is a pretty big hitter's ballpark in Milwaukee. So they will be able to score some runs. But, yeah, if I was a Brewer fan, I would be super concerned about that offense and a little bit nervous about my rotation just the way they started, just because, like we said, we've only seen those guys really do it for one full season. Can they repeat what they did last year?
Yeah, that's the harder thing is repeating. And when you have dominant seasons like those guys did, it is definitely harder when you're not the typical, you know, you're not the Max Scherzer, you're not the Clayton Kershaws, you're not the Randy Johnsons of the world where, you know, you have that intangibleness to you that, you know, going in year in and year out, you're going to be like that. So, yeah, it's going to be definitely difficult to repeat, but I think they are going to be a solid number 2 in this division. And I mean, that's not saying much because after that, you got the Cubs who, you know, they aren't really going for it, but they kind of are going for it. They're one of those teams. They're kind of almost a little bit like the Rockies in a sense where, you know, they push some people out. You know, they traded a bunch of guys last year, Baez, Rizzo, you know, just everybody they traded last year, Bryant as well. And none of those guys came back. But then you bring in, you know, Suzuki from Japan and you made a couple other moves and then you sit there and you go, well, they had a fire sale to kind of reset, but then they made some moves in the offseason that make you go, okay, maybe they're trying to be competitive. What really do we make of the Cubs this year? And I mean, obviously they're going to be the third place team because the Reds and Pirates are even worse, but you know, what are the Cubs?
You know, that's the million-dollar question is, what are the Cubs? You know, and while we say, oh, they're the third-place team, you know, they're one of those teams because they did go out and they got Stroman and they brought in the guy from Japan who everybody says looks really good, and they made a couple other moves here and there to kind of at least make their team competitive. They're one of those teams that if they get off to a hot start and the Brewers or somebody struggle, the Cubs might say, oh, we're better than we think we are. And then all of a sudden they're competitive and they're right there. And the next thing you know, they're the second place team in the division. You know, I mean, we see things like that happen all the time in baseball where it's like, wait a minute, where did these guys come from? They weren't supposed to be any good. You know, the Cubs did shore up their rotation a little bit. They went out and got Marcus Stroman. They went out and got Wade Miley. So they do have some guys in their pitching in their rotation along with Kyle Hendricks. So the rotation's going to be decent. They've got some guys in that lineup that can hit. I mean, you've got, you know, you've got an Ian Happ. You've got Wilson Contreras. You've got our old buddy Jason Hayward, who you never know what you're going to get from him offensively. You know, they shored up their defense a little bit. They went out and got a guy like Adelton Simmons. He's not going to hit a whole lot, but he's going to catch everything at shortstop. So, you know, they've got a team that's not horrible. You know, it's not the Cubs of, like you said, Bryant and Rizzo and Baez. But I think they're a team that can surprise some people. So I think they're going to be more competitive than we thought. I think they probably finished third. But would it shock me if they snuck up there and caught the Brewers or the Cardinals if they struggled and, you know, slid into second place? It wouldn't totally shock me.
I can see that being the case as well. And actually, that'll be one of my arguments a little bit later on when we talk about some of these other teams, about how there's always that shock team that starts off hot and stays there. So we'll talk about that in a bit. And then you obviously got Cincinnati and Pittsburgh kind of at the bottom of the division. You got Pittsburgh in the bottom spot. I've actually got them finishing ahead of the Reds this year. The main reason for that is I just feel like the Reds are going to be so far out of it that we might actually see Joey Votto get moved at the deadline. And he's like the last piece in that Reds organization that, you know, can make things happen. And I think when that happens, that'll signal kind of like the end for the Reds. And the Pirates have some things to be excited about this year. You know, keep Ryan Hayes, and then they've got their rookie down there as well, the shortstop. I believe he's a 6'7 shortstop, which is incredible for a baseball player in general to be 6'7, but to be at shortstop and be that tall, that's insane. So I feel like the Pirates have a little bit more excitement coming this year as we're, the Reds are kind of on a downturn. So I see the Pirates finishing ahead of the Reds at the end of this season.
Yeah, I went back and forth on that. The only reason I had the Reds ahead of them is because the Reds didn't trade Castillo or Trevor Nyland yet. They still have those two pieces in their rotation. So, you know, if they move those guys, then I think they do bottom out and Pittsburgh jumps ahead of them. I just think the Reds, with those two guys still in their rotation, have a little bit more pitching-wise than Pittsburgh does, which is, I think those two teams are going to be close to each other, but I think the pitching will edge the Reds ahead of Pittsburgh unless they move those guys at the deadline.
So let's jump over to the NL West now. I think, you know, the Giants really surprised a lot of people last year, us included, because I think we both had the Giants near the bottom of the division. But they surprised for sure. But this is still the Dodgers division to win. I mean, they are still up at the top. Yes, they lost Corey Seager, but they brought in Freddie Freeman. Trey Turner shifts over to shortstop. They've still got Walker Buehler at the top of the rotation. Kershaw is injury prone, yes, but if he's healthy, he's very, very good. And they replaced Kenley Jansen with Craig Kimbrell. So the Dodgers got better somehow in the offseason. And I think it's no question they're going to essentially rebound this year and win the division. I've got the Giants coming in after that, as far as that is concerned. And then after that, for me, I've got the Padres, the D-backs, and the Rockies. And Scott, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. I had a little bit of a freeze there. I wanted to make sure. So, yeah, I've got the Dodgers, Giants, Padres, D-backs, and Rockies for me as far as the NL West is concerned. I just, once again, just like the Mets in a sense, the Padres to me, they just cannot get out of their own way when it comes to injuries. And I think that's once again going to come back and bite them in the butt. And it may not be the pitchers this time. It may be the offense that gets hit. I mean, obviously, Fernando Tatis Jr. has the motorcycle injury. Which motorcycle injury? We don't know. But he did have to deal with that. So I just feel like they're just not going to be able to get out of their own way. They're still good enough to get to third. But I just I don't see them being able to overcome that. And the Giants, yeah, they lost one of their best pitchers in Kevin Gausman, but they have a very solid core. Brandon Crawford's still there. Brandon Belt, Yastrzemski, all those guys are still there. Yes, they're north of 30 now, but they've got the maturity and they've got some good, exciting youth coming up that I think they're going to be able to hold serve when it comes to sitting in second place ahead of the Padres this year.
You're higher on the Giants than I am. You know, I think Kevin Gausman leaving them is going to be a big loss. You know, I mean, he was huge for them last year, and that's going to be hard for them to fill. And then the other piece that, you know, their leader, their captain, not having Buster Posey. You know, Buster Posey had such a massive season, bounce back season last year. And for him to retire, I think that's a huge loss for them. You know, Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford, you know, a couple of years ago, everybody had said, oh, they're done. You know, they've slowed down. They're over 30. You know, they just don't look like guys that can play anymore. They kind of had a renaissance last year, kind of looked more like themselves. I kind of think Father Time catches up with them again this year. I just don't see them being able to hit enough. You know, again, not having Posey in the middle of that lineup, I think that's going to be a huge loss for them. Not having Gausman, I think, is big. I think the Padres, well, the Padres, like you said, are injury prone. I was going to say, I think the Padres are going to win. And you said, oh, it might be the lineup that gets them this year instead of the rotation. Well, I just saw that Blake Snell got pulled from his start yesterday and is going on the disabled list. So, you know, the Padres keep going out and getting these big-name pitchers, you know, Mike Clevinger, Blake Snell, Yu Darvish, but they can't keep them healthy. The Padres lineup is good enough, even without Tatis, they should be able to hold off the Giants, I think, and come in with in the second place. But you got to wonder how content some of those guys are. You know, when you look at a guy like Will Myers and Eric Hosmer that you know that the Padres were trying to trade right up till opening day, and you're still on the team, but you weren't because they weren't able to make a move. How excited are you to still be on that ball club when you know you're not really wanted at this point? So it's going to be interesting to see how those guys, you know, kind of respond to those trade rumors and the fact that they know that the Padres were trying to move them. Like I said, I think they're more talented than the Giants. I think they come in second, but it's going to be interesting to see. And then jump into the Dodgers really quick. The Dodgers have a killer lineup. I'm concerned about the Dodgers' pitching rotation. We talk about the Cardinals' rotation all the time. I'm not sure that the Dodgers' pitching, and you look what they did against Colorado this week, that rotation looks really bad. Urias was not good in the postseason last year. You know, he had a great season during the regular season, struggled in the postseason. He was really bad at his start the other day. Their bullpen has not been good. You know, they did replace Kenley Jansen, you know, with Craig Kimbrell. But you lost guys like Joe Kelly and a couple other guys in that bullpen. So I'm not sure how they fill those spots. You know, I think the Giants still win. Or I'm sorry, I think the Dodgers still win that division, but I don't think the Dodgers are quite as dominant as they were last year or the year before that. And then you've got to ask questions about Cody Bellinger. Cody Bellinger did not have a good year last year. He got hot for the postseason, but he looks really lost again at the plate to start this season. You know, if Cody Bellinger is not the MVP, Cody Bellinger, as good as that lineup is, they're not as dangerous if you don't have that guy really contributing.
Yeah, you need to have a guy in the middle of that lineup that's really basically laying it down as far as protection and things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of question marks out there in the West, and it probably could come down to a three-team race. You know, there's no question that I don't think anybody's really going to run away with this division. I think it is going to be a lot closer. I really like, though, what the Dodgers did offensively with what they brought in and the moves, you know, the shifting around, especially Turner over at shortstop. And we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. It comes down to question marks. And for the Dodgers, it comes down to production as well. So it should be an interesting set of games out there as well. And before we move on to the AL side of things, I want to just get your thoughts on the new rule about the, you know, obviously the universal DH. And it's something the American League teams have obviously had for a very, very long time. They're used to it. Which team in your mind, though, benefits the most from the universal DH? I mean, is it the Cardinals because they were able to bring in a guy like Albert Pujols? Or is there another team that was actually a little bit better set up or made a move to set themselves up to really benefit from the universal DH?
I'm going to go with the team that I picked to win the East. I'm going to go with Philadelphia because of the fact that you were able to get Schwarber and Castellanos, and you don't have to have both of those guys playing your corner outfield positions every day. You can alternate, you know, because neither one of them are great defensively. So you can alternate, you know, have one of them in the outfield, have one of them DH, and still have those bats in the lineup. So I think National League-wise, I would go with Philadelphia.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. All right, let's flip over to the AL real quick. AL East is dangerous once again. I don't know if it's as dangerous as it was in the late 90s, early 2000s when you had the Yankees and the Red Sox really going at it and the Rays coming on strong. But I think this is a very intriguing division. We both have the Blue Jays sitting up top as far as winning the division this year. And I think it's mainly because of the fact that they are just absolutely loaded at offense. Now, their pitching staff still a little bit to be decided, although they did go out and pick up a guy like Kevin Gausman as well to go along with their rotation. Although Ryu gets hurt, and he's probably going into the disabled list as well. So question marks around their rotation outside of just, you know, health-wise are still there. You've got the Yankees at two, Rays at three. I've got those two flip-flopped. Once again, though, I think that they're going to basically be battling it out all season. So it's not really a matter of one team is clearly ahead of the other. You've got the Red Sox sitting down there in fourth, followed by the Orioles. I have the Red Sox finishing in dead last this year. And it's not so much that I think the Red Sox are terrible. I just still don't really know what to expect from them. They have some decent players. Obviously, Chris Sale is going to be coming back this year at some point. But I just, you look at the Red Sox and you just go, there are some names there, but can they really put it all together? And yes, saying that with the Baltimore Orioles, you know, rising above them for fourth place in that division is really a bit of a stretch. But, you know, just like the Pirates, I think the Orioles have some things to be excited about this year. And I think they might be a team that could be on the rise, maybe not a contender for a playoff spot, but they might be one of those teams you look at this year and you go, okay, all right, let's see what you got next year, because you might be there next year. And I think this is the year that they kind of overtake one of those big teams in the East. And I think it's the Red Sox, just because I don't really know what they're all about.
Yeah. I mean, the Red Sox have a lot of questions with their pitching. You know, when exactly is Chris Sale going to be able to pitch? That's the biggest one. I like some of the stuff Baltimore's doing. They've got some young players. You know, they've got a guy like Trey Mancini that can kind of lead some of those young guys. Their young catcher, you know, that's one of the top prospects in baseball, is going to be really good as he tries to make his way through the majors this year in Baltimore. They've got a couple of young pitchers that are coming. I just think it's got another year or two before they really make noise. I think the Red Sox have enough in that lineup. You know, that lineup is still pretty scary when you've got Bogarts and Rafael Devers and J.D. Martinez and Trevor Story, and it goes on and on and on. So I think Boston's still going to be able to score enough runs that they're able to finish third or fourth in that division. I have the Yankees finishing second. I have a ton of questions about their pitching as well.
Yep.
It's pretty much Garrett Cole or nothing in New York. I really think this is the year that Toronto may run away with that division, just because, like you said, that lineup, you know, going out, that lineup was loaded already, and then you go out and make a move for a guy like Matt Chapman. You know, I mean, who is going to just absolutely destroy that ballpark? You know, people remember a few years ago when they made the move for Josh Donaldson and he became the bringer of rain because of all the home runs that he hit in Toronto. Matt Chapman's going to have pretty much the exact same impact when he goes from the same path that Donaldson did, going from Oakland, which is a pitcher's park, to Toronto. Chapman's going to absolutely destroy it there. And then even though Ryu's hurt, I still like that 1-2 that the Toronto has in their rotation when you go get Kevin Gausman. And they re-signed Jose Berrios, who they traded for at the trade deadline with Minnesota. So I think they've still got enough in their rotation. Their bullpen's pretty strong. And, I mean, that lineup from 1-9 is just killer in Toronto. So I think this is finally the Blue Jays' year.
I agree with you 100%. And we'll get to our our World Series predictions here in just a little bit after we wrap up these other two divisions. So don't be surprised if the Blue Jays name pops up again in a few minutes. But moving to the AL Central, we've got Chicago up at the top. I think, once again, just kind of like the Blue Jays, they're one of those teams that they're there. We know where they're going to be at. They produced last year. They struggled a little bit, for sure. Don't get me wrong, but they were also a very young team. So they may have learned from last year. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, learning from your losses. I believe a young team has to lose in order to learn how to win. And I think that is what happened last year with the White Sox. I think they lost some games that they shouldn't have, and they got, you know, knocked out of the playoffs in a year that maybe they didn't feel like they should have been. But more than likely, they're going to be able to come back from that and learn from that. So I really like them up at the top, and I think they've learned from those mistakes. I've got the Royals at second. You've got the Twins at second. I've got the Tigers, then the Twins, then the Guardians. You go Twins, Royals, Tigers, Guardians as well. And I think, and this is the argument that I'm going to make now, because, you know, you brought it up a little while ago. There's sometimes a team that starts off really hot and they get up near the top of the division, and then they start to believe in themselves, and then maybe they go out and make a move to solidify that. And I think that it's the Royals this year. I think, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. has, you know, given them a spark early on. I think they were a team last year that you looked at them and they weren't as bad as you may have thought they were. And, you know, they brought in Zach Greinke as well. And I think, honestly, for me, on both sides, Zach Greinke wouldn't be going back to Kansas City, and Kansas City wouldn't be bringing in Zach Greinke if they didn't feel like they could compete for a playoff position this year. Not to say that Greinke's going to anchor that staff or anything like that, but that's like one of those, you know, depth moves that, hey, we're bringing in a mature guy that's been there and has won a championship, and now we're going to let him teach this team and teach them how to win. And it may not propel them to a deep playoff run, but just like the White Sox last year, I think it could be one of those moments where they get to a point where they've won enough and then they lose some games, and that in turn propels them into the future for the next couple of years. I really like the Royals up at the second spot this year.
Yeah, I like Kansas City. You know, I'm a huge fan of Bobby Witt Jr. They've got a couple of other young players coming. And during the course of the season, they've got a young first baseman that'll be up here. They've got a couple of outfielders that are coming. They've got a couple of pitchers that are coming. I think they're going to be really good. You know, your point on Greinke, you know, Greinke going back to Kansas City just feels right. It's kind of like Pujols coming back to St. Louis to finish his career. Greinke goes back to the place where it all started, where he won his first Cy Young. And, you know, hopefully Zach's got a couple of years left and can get the Royals back to the postseason. I like that team. I think the Twins are going to be really sneaky. You know, the Twins have made a bunch of moves, kind of under the radar moves. You know, they went out and got guys to solidify their starting rotation. They went and got Chris Paddock last week from the Padres. They've done a couple other things. They went and got Carlos Correa. Who saw Carlos Correa going to Minnesota? You know, they've got a good lineup. I think they're going to be interesting. You know, and the White Sox, it should be the White Sox division to win, although the White Sox have had their pitching staff just decimated with injuries. Lance Lynn had surgery on his foot. Lucas Giolito had an abdominal strain in his first start. You know, Tony came out the other day and said he hoped that he was only going to miss two or three starts, but you just never know with something like that. You know, an abdominal strain like that, you could re-aggravate it. You could miss 4 or 5 months if you come back too soon. So, you know, that'll be really interesting to see how that works out for them. You know, that was really their strength, was their pitching. I mean, they've got good hitters, but they had so much strong pitching depth led by Lance Lynn. And to lose him and Giolito both, you know, the week before the season starts, that's a pretty big blow. Another team to really watch out for is the Tigers. The Tigers were better last year than anybody expected. They went out and made some sneaky moves as well. Signed Javi Baez. They made a couple of other moves. Got Austin Meadows this week from Tampa. You know, they're a team that's going to surprise some people. They're not as bad as they thought. Miguel Cabrera seems to have a little fire lit under him again, you know, as he's closing out his Hall of Fame career. So, you know, the Tigers are going to make a run too. I think you can see Minnesota, Kansas City, and Detroit all kind of fighting each other for that second spot in that division. And if the White Sox pitching issues last for very long, you could see a 4-team race in that division. Cleveland isn't quite there yet. You know, I was surprised to see that they re-signed Ramirez this week to a long-term deal. They also re-signed their closer. So the Guardians are trying to build something, but Cleveland's a couple of years away from really being in contention again.
That they are. And I think you're right on the fact that the Royals, Tigers, Twins are really going to be able – they're just going to rotate through that second spot for most of the season. It's going to be a battle in the 2, 3, and 4 spot in that AL Central. It should be a lot of fun there. And we'll see the Royals here in St. Louis tomorrow night for the first of two. Night game tomorrow night and a day game on Wednesday. All right, AL West, real quick. You got the Mariners up at the top. You know, you and I were both thinking that the Mariners were going to rise up a little bit last year. They did. They just missed out on the playoffs. And this year, you think they're going to take that final step, and they are going to eventually take over and win this division over the Astros. And you got Rangers, Angels, A's after that. I still think it's the Astros division to lose. The Mariners are going to be right there for me. I've got the Angels sneakily in that third spot ahead of the Rangers. I just don't trust Texas at all. I do not trust them. So I think with Ohtani, I think Trout coming back this year, he could have a monster year. And really, the Angels played a lot better in the second half of the season last year, especially, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but after they dumped Albert Pujols, they really kind of turned things around there a little bit. So I like to see them continue on their rise as well. So I got them sitting in the third spot. But make your case for why the Mariners are going to win the AL West this year.
They're a loaded ball club. They've got a lot of young talent. They've got a couple of kids that are going to be in rookie of the year contention in their outfield. You've got a guy like Mitch Haniger, who is a 30 homer, 100 RBI guy in your outfield. You went out and got Jesse Winker and Eduardo Suarez from the Reds. You know, Winker's a rising star in the outfield. Suarez, we know what he can do, the power that he possesses. They made a couple other moves. You went out and signed Robbie Ray to add to your rotation with Marco Gonzalez at the top of that rotation. They've got a really solid bullpen. You know, I just think this is their year. You know, Oakland is going to bottom out. We saw them basically have a fire sale and get rid of everybody. I'm with you. I don't trust Texas. I know they spent all that money on their lineup. I still don't think they're going to pitch. I also don't trust the Angels either. I don't think the Angels are going to pitch. You know, their best pitcher is still Ohtani, and I don't know how long you can count on a guy like that to pitch in and lead your lineup. So I have questions about them. And Houston's still going to be good, but Houston's lost a lot the last couple of years. I mean, when you lose George Springer and then you lose Carlos Correa in back-to-back years, you can fill those voids, but that's a lot to try to make up for. You know, Justin Verlander is coming off injury again. He's a little bit older. Jake Odorizzi in that rotation. Lance McCullers has had injury problems the last couple of years. So I'm not 100% sold on that rotation being able to hold up. I just think this is Seattle's year. You know, like I said, I think that lineup's good. I think Robbie Ray and Marco Gonzalez at the top of that rotation are probably the best 1-2 in that Western division in rotation-wise.
It's surely going to be very, very interesting for sure. All right, let's jump into our World Series predictions. I want to pop those up on the screen right now. Scott, you've got the Mariners and Blue Jays in the ALCS, the Phillies and Cardinals in the NLCS, and the Cardinals and Jays meeting in the World Series with the Cardinals coming out on top. And honestly, you and I have both at the same World Series matchup, different outcome. I think the Blue Jays are going to take it, but I've got the Dodgers in the NLCS and the White Sox in the ALCS. So it really comes down to, we both believe that it's going to be an all-bird World Series this year. What prompted you to go with the Jays and Cardinals, and why are you as high on the Cardinals as you are?
I really like the depth the Cardinals have. You know, I really like the Cardinals' bullpen. I think that bullpen is going to be a weapon. I think it's going to end up being one of the best bullpens, and not just the National League. I think it's going to end up being one of the best bullpens in baseball when you look at the depth up and down that bullpen. You know, if you get Jack Flaherty back at a reasonable amount of time and he's healthy, that rotation really solidifies when you have Flaherty and Wainwright and Metz and a healthy Dakota Hudson. I think that's a solid four. And like I said, I believe that if they're in the hunt, they'll go out and get a starting pitcher to really make a run. And then I think that lineup is as dangerous as anybody in the National League, top to bottom. I really do. I think you've got three MVP finalists in the middle of your lineup in Goldie Arenado and Tyler O'Neill. So I think that does it. And then you've got the best defensive team in baseball. You know, when you can hit, play defense, and you can pitch, that's pretty tough to beat. You know, if the Cardinals have the bullpen, if their starting rotation can be decent, they're going to be really, really tough to beat.
You're right. You're 100% right on that. And honestly, the reason I did not pick the Cardinals is because I did not want to jinx them. I did not want to get my hopes up that I picked them to win the World Series. So that's why I went with the Blue Jays. That offense, yes, I know you talk about the Cardinals offense being very, very deadly. And, you know, they can put up big numbers, but they also have a propensity for going cold at the wrong time. And at least early on, I have not seen the Blue Jays go cold for stretches at a time. Now, yes, they have guys that have gone in slumps and not hit and stuff like that, but it just seems like with the Cardinals, they always seem to have a moment where it just everybody goes cold at once. And my fear is that this year they'll be so hot through the entire season that it'll be the World Series that they go cold in, and it would just be our luck that that's when it happens, going up against a team that can absolutely mash as well. So that's kind of the main reason I went against the Cardinals was I didn't want to jinx them. I didn't want to get my hopes up that I picked them. And there's still a little bit of that slight fear in the back of my mind that this team offensively will go cold in the biggest moment. But that's also because the last couple of regimes have been a bit older. They've been a bit different, a little bit more old school, a little bit more, past in as far as past tense is concerned. And I like what Marmol is going to be able to do here with this team. I think obviously being, a younger manager, I think with experience is going to bode well for this team. And that's why I feel like they have the ability to get to the World Series. And I'm going to cross my fingers. I'm going to hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope you are 100% right. I hope you nail this pick because I would be incredibly happy if that were the case. So that's our World Series predictions. Now let's get into our awards. NL Awards, you went for it, man. Tyler O'Neill is your NL MVP. You got Max Fried at Cy Young, Bryson Scott out of Philadelphia for your Rookie of the Year, Ali Marmol for Manager of the Year, and Ronald Acuna Jr. as your Comeback Player of the Year. Talk a little bit about why you went that direction for your NL picks.
My NL MVP, I went back and forth because I was going back and forth between O'Neill and Goldie, honestly, for my MVP in the National League. Nolan's going to be right there, obviously. I just think with that setup, I think with Tyler hitting in between Goldie and Arenado, he's going to get so many RBI opportunities, so many pitches to hit because guys don't want to have to pitch to Nolan with people on base. I think he's going to get so many chances to hit, in really good RBI opportunities. And then with his speed and his defense, there's a good chance that he could be a 30 home run, 25, 30 stolen base guy and win a gold glove and hit 280 or 290 like we saw last year. And you put all of those stats together, that's an MVP caliber player. So I think that's why I went with Tyler. Max Fried, kind of like what I talked about when we were previewing the Braves, there's so much hype around him coming out of that class with Giolito and Jack Flaherty out of high school. He was kind of the Braves' ace down the stretch last year. I think he's got a ton of talent. I think that's why I went there. Ali Marmol, I think, again, like I said, I think the Cardinals win the National League, and him being the new manager, I think he gets that award. And then Acuna Jr., I think he'll be solid enough when he comes back and with the name recognition and everything. I think that's why I go with Ronald to win my Comeback Player of the Year. How about you? What do you got?
So I went with Trey Turner out of L.A. I think he is going to be a stud this year. I think he's going to get back into form. He played very well for the Dodgers at the end of the year last year. And I think he continues that this year and really has to lead that team. And if they do win that division, I think it's going to be because of him. Corbin Burns for the Cy Young. I like your pick of Fried. I think it's a really good dark horse pick. But Burns was kind of the front runner last year. I think he's able to put up another good season. I think he's going to win in a crowded field. I don't think there's going to be one dominant pitcher this year in the National League. I think there's going to be a handful of guys that could win the Cy Young, but I just think Burns is going to be able to replicate at least partially what he did last year. I think O'Neill Cruz in Pittsburgh, he's going to get that call up here very, very soon. And he is going to put up some big time numbers this year. Paired with Ke'Bryan Hayes, I think that could be a really, really good duo for a while to come. I like Marmol as well. I think he's going to have a lot to work with, and I think people are going to recognize the fact that, he had what he had, and he still, as a rookie manager, was able to put together a very cohesive team. And I think that's really what it comes down to. The cohesiveness is going to be what wins him that award. And I'm going to go dark horse for Comeback Player of the Year. I think he's, as you said earlier, going to be a huge part of this rotation. I think Dakota Hudson is going to be a very, very underrated player this year. Somebody that is going to rack up a lot of wins. He's going to have a very low ERA. I think he's going to be a player that you look at and you go, wow, we thought he was going to be something special a few years ago. this just proved it. And I think he's going to end up winning that comeback player of the year award. And as far as your MVP is concerned, you talk about the fact that O'Neill, Goldschmidt, and Arenado will all potentially be MVP finalists. You feel like there could be a potential MV3 situation like the Cardinals had, where they all kind of split votes and somebody else takes the award.
I mean, it's possible. It's possible. We saw it last year. They all three got votes. And we're all three in the top 10. I think because of the fact that Tyler is young and he's kind of emerging as one of those young superstars in the game, I think this is the year where maybe he gets that award.
I hope so. I think that would be a great cap for him. And it wouldn't be great for the Cardinals, though, because they got to sign the guy to a contract. So hopefully they get the contract for their sake. They hope a contract gets done here very soon before an MVP-type season where the money is going to have to start flowing. So we'll see how that plays out. Over on the American League side, you talked up Matt Chapman. You thought he was going to be a huge piece up there in Toronto. You got him winning the MVP. I'm going to go with Luis Robert. I think he is one of those, like I said, young player that learned a lot last year, and he'll be able to take advantage of that. We both went with Lucas Giolito for the Cy Young. Once again, it's kind of a bit of a crowded field, but I just think, and obviously outstanding, the injury is putting things into whack early on, but I think he'll definitely rise above the crop and win the Cy Young this year. That your mindset there, you think he's the best pitcher in the American League?
I do. It's like you said, it's going to come down to how long this abdominal injury shuts him down. But yeah, I do think he's the best young pitcher in the American League.
And then you got Bobby Witt Jr. as Rookie of the Year. He's already impressed early on, has had, you know, the go-ahead hit on opening day, the game-winning home run a day later. He had a great play in the field as well. He's been electrifying for the Royals early on. He's everything that was talked about when it comes to, you know, what a stud rookie would be, and I think he's going to run away with this. Although you look up at J-Rod as well, he could be another guy that has a potential to maybe steal some thunder from Bobby Witt Jr. So we'll have to keep an eye on that as well. You like Scott Servais out in Seattle. You got them winning the AL West, so that makes a lot of sense as to why you would go that direction. Charlie Montoyo for me up in Toronto. I just think once again they're going to be a division winner, and if they do run away with that East, it's going to be because of the way he managed that team, is able to work his rotation the right way, keep people healthy. So I like that. And then you're going with Mike Trout as the comeback player of the year. I think that might be a little bit of a easy pick, Scott. Yeah, just saying.
A little bit.
But little I mean, bit. It's Mike Trout. So, and right. I went with Justin Verlander. I think he comes back as another strong year, and he helps Houston win that division. So maybe both of our picks are a little bit easy in a sense, but you know, how can you go wrong when Mike Trout was partially hurt last year and he comes back and has a full season like a Mike Trout does?
Yeah, the Angels definitely need him. You know, he missed most of the year last year, you know, just wasn't able to come back. So, you know, possibly with him and Ohtani, maybe they make a run at the West, although I still don't think that team has enough pitching.
Yeah, the pitching has always been a question in LA, and that's kind of what you kind of have to go with. And they went out and they got Ohtani, obviously, but he cannot pitch every day. He can hit every day, but he can't pitch every day. So, yeah, they're going to have to figure out something when it comes to the rotation. So that's kind of our MLB preview. We already know opening weekend has commenced. So there are teams that are at the top of the division that we put at the bottom and all that fun stuff. But glad to get that out there as well, because – you know, it's fun to make predictions and then look back at the end of the year and go, wow, we were really wrong or we were really right. So hopefully in this case, Scott was really, really right when he picked the Cardinals to win the World Series.
Let's hope so. I was really, really wrong last year because I picked the Giants to finish behind the Rockies in the NL West last year. So
I think I was right around there too. I think maybe I had them finishing ahead of the Rockies by a little bit. So the fact that the Giants did what they did last year, it just means that anything can happen. I mean,
right?
You could look at Baltimore. Baltimore could win the AL East if they really wanted to.
If they wanted to, they could. Real quick, I heard they could. I can't say a whole lot about Baltimore. I'm an Orioles fan from way back. Cal Ripken Jr. was one of my favorite players. I've been to Baltimore. I love that ballpark. It kills me that the Orioles are bad, but they are on the right track. But I just wanted to ask you, I was going to talk to you about this when we were talking about the Cubs. Did you hear the story that came out this week about the Cubs and their offer to Carlos Correa?
I think I remember a little bit about what essentially they had an offer, but they never presented it to him, but they said they did.
He changed agents. He changed agents and they couldn't figure out how to get the offer to his agent. So the offer never, it was like 10 years. It was like 10 years, $300 million, but apparently they could never figure out how to get the offer in front of Correa himself. He never saw it. If that's not a Cub thing, I don't understand.
I was going to say, I don't even know how that's possible, but yes, if anybody would find a way, it would be the Chicago Cubs. And, you know, honestly, I'm kind of glad that it didn't work out that way, because I think Correa could have done wonders there in Chicago. He would have been a beast to deal with up at Wrigley Field. But yeah, good job, Chicago.
Go Cubs. There's a reason why they won one World Series.
That is very true. Absolutely true. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, the Cardinals and Royals are underway tomorrow night, and then they have a game on Wednesday, day game. So we're going to be off tomorrow night as Scott will be down at the ballpark, working the field, essentially. Not on the field, but, you know, you're there. You have a lot of fun down there. And then we should be back with you guys Wednesday night to talk about the conclusion of that series. It's actually kind of nice that this game got rained out for the Cardinals, because they were starting off with a good stretch of games. They were not going to be off until next Monday. So they would have been, nine straight games that they would have had to play. So the rainout actually kind of helped them. And I got to ask you, because I didn't get a whole lot of rainout where I'm from, but was there a lot of rain downtown? I mean, is that the main reason why they called the game? Or was it because, you know, Pittsburgh had to travel and they didn't want to have to deal with potential rain delays pushing the game back further and further?
There wasn't a ton of rain downtown. There was a lot of rain around St. Louis. You know, and I think they were just afraid that it was going to push things back further and further, and the Pirates were not going to get out of town fast enough because they wanted to get them home for their home opener tomorrow. So, yeah, I think it was just a precautionary thing. You know, I think they expected more rain downtown than they actually got.
I thought that was the case, because that's kind of what I saw around. You know, people were putting in their rain totals and things like that. And I was like, oh, okay. But when you sit there and go, yeah, Pittsburgh's home opener is tomorrow. It's going to be nice there. They want to make sure that they can celebrate the proper way as well. So get them a chance to get home, get settled, get ready to go, and have a good night's rest. So it's almost, you know, a good job by Major League Baseball and the Cardinals and the Pirates kind of working together to make sure that they made the right call at the right time to get people into the right spots at the right time. So, good job, MLB.
Can I say that? Yeah. It seems like that happens to the car. It seems like that.
Although
happens
I'll say this.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, at least MLB, you know, canceled the game properly and gave all the players Bose headphones. So,
Rob Manfred's peace offering right there. Here, have some headphones. Yeah. Yeah, you know, that happens to the Cardinals every time they try to preemptively cancel a game for a rain delay, then it ends up not really raining at the ballpark. I don't know how many times that's happened. They're like, oh, we're going to get a ton of rain. We're calling this game early. And then like 20 minutes later, the sun's out. And you're like, what the hell is going on here? But for anybody that's headed to the ballpark on Wednesday is going to be a nasty rain day, storm day. We're at a level 4 for severe weather on Wednesday. They're saying, you know, chance of gusty winds, damaging hail, and tornadoes. So, you know, I'm going to be at the ballpark. The Royals are going to be at the ballpark. We may all end up in Kansas before that game's over on Wednesday.
Well, I'll tell you what. I remember, because Good Friday is this Friday, I remember I was down at Busch Stadium for the Good Friday tornadoes. And that was a very interesting experience, because we did not know at all what was going on around us. We knew that there was obviously the tornado warnings. We ended up going into the concourses and all that as well, but we had no idea what was happening. It was actually my brother's bachelor party too. So, it was a crazy thing. We were drinking. We had no idea really what was going on. And then obviously after the game, we drove home and we saw everything that was going down. We're like, oh my goodness. So the fact that, you know, a couple days before Good Friday, you may have another potential situation. That should be fun. So make sure you guys stay safe out there.
Yep, absolutely. Talking about the Good Friday tornado all those years ago, I was managing a restaurant out in Eureka when that happened. and the front of our restaurant was all glass. So the Eureka Police Department comes into the restaurant and says, there's been a tornado spotted. It's headed right for us. Everybody in the restaurant needs to go to the kitchen. So imagine Good Friday, Friday night, you're trying to cook food, and here come all your patrons, some of them with their food, with their beer glasses, in the kitchen while you're trying to cook a packed restaurant. It was crazy. Like, people were literally going into our walk-in and grabbing their own beers, like customers, just walking in the walk-in, opening the door, popping beers, drinking while we were cooking their food. I mean, it was insane.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we've done that at our store where we've taken people back into the walk-ins and stuff like that when we've had severe weather. But yeah, we don't have beer. So it's not like people are in there going, ooh, let me take this, let me take that. But yeah, I can only imagine. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I'm good. I would never want to be in that situation in my life. Oh goodness gracious. All right. Well, Scott, what else you got before we head out tonight?
Nothing, man. Good week. Fun week of baseball. I hope everybody got to the ballpark this week and enjoyed it. If you didn't, I hope you're able to get down there the next couple of days, catch some good games with the Royals, get to see Albert a little bit, and good to have baseball back, man. Good to have full stadiums and happy fans, and it was a good weekend, man. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, it certainly was, and like we said earlier, Albert we'll be in the starting lineup tomorrow night as the DH. So if you got tickets to that game, make sure you get down there and enjoy it. And if not, if you find tickets, maybe go ahead and grab them, because you may be getting a chance to see Albert's first home run as a Cardinal in more than 10 years. So definitely do that. Blues are in Boston tomorrow night. We didn't get a chance to talk about them too much, but they have been on a bit of a roll, 4-game sweep at home, including a big time win for Jordan Binnington on Saturday night. That was a great game against the Islanders. You had the Masters this weekend. Tiger came back. Not great, but he made the cut, and he got out there 14 months after a horrific car crash. So you got to give him props for doing that. He did commit to the British Open as well later this year. So he will be playing in at least one more major, maybe the PGA Championship as well. We'll see if that happens, but I think it's going to be a matter of how his body rests up. Scottie Scheffler ended up winning the Masters, justifying that number one world ranking that he has right now. So just overall, I mean, it was a great weekend of sports. And this is actually one more thing before we go, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, because I heard them and they're on the radio this weekend. They were talking about, was this one of the greatest weekends in sports, timeline of the year? You had the Masters, you had opening weekend for baseball, and then obviously you had basketball and hockey going on as well. The one guy made an argument that if it doesn't include football, it cannot be considered the greatest time frame in sports. Do you believe that's the case? And if so, what is your best time of year to be a sports fan?
I love this time of the year. I also love the fall. Fall, you've got baseball heading into the postseason. You've got basketball starting. You've got football starting. You've got hockey starting. So, they're close, man. They're close because, spring, you've got everything else wrapping up. Baseball starting. Fall, you've got baseball wrapping up and everything, all the fall sports starting, football, hockey, basketball. So those would be my two favorites for sure.
Now, do you buy into the argument, though, that if it's not including football, it can't be considered a great time in no. sports? Like, is football the end-all, be-all? Is that the one where you have to have football for it to be considered a great time frame in sports?
No, because I'm a baseball junkie, so for me, baseball needs to be involved there. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that look at football that way, too. I guess it just it comes down basically, I guess, to what your real sports passion is. If you're a hockey guy, you're like, well, it's got to either be the beginning or the end of hockey season. Or if you're a basketball guy, it just comes down to what your preference is as much as anything, I think.
Yeah, I could see that being the case for sure. 100%. But I think I'm right there with you. I think the fall is definitely a great piece, because when you can find – the end of the Major League Baseball season playoff push, start of college and NFL, you got the start of the NHL and the NBA, and you still got, obviously soccer is wrapping up as well, because I'm a big soccer fan too. So like when all of that is going at one time, it's right around the start of school is essentially the way it is. That time frame is right about the point where it's the mecca of sports. And yes, college basketball isn't a part of that. Obviously, you're a big college basketball fan. You think it needs to be a part of it. So there's always going to be something that you're missing out on. But that start of school time is about the point of the year where you go, yeah, this is about as good as it gets. So, yeah, we'll leave that up to you guys. You guys can argue out amongst yourselves about that. What's the best time of year for sports? Make sure you let us know in the comments about what you think it is. And we'll discuss this further if we get some more traction and reaction to that as well. So, all right. Well, thank you guys for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed our Major League Baseball preview. Make sure you mark this down to come back at the end of the year and yell at us or praise us, one of the two. Because who knows? Maybe one of us will actually be right. Like I said, we're taking the day off tomorrow. We should be back with you guys on Wednesday. We got some big things in the works later on this month as well. We'll release those as soon as we are able to. So make sure you stay tuned for that. For Scott Tobin, I am Wags. Thank you guys once again for joining us. Have a great night and, you know, be safe out there.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.